17th July 1981.
Well, I would imagine another part of your motivation must be that you were getting quite involved in radio astronomy and felt like you'd like to get some more practical experience in it.
Sure, yes.
And why did that appeal?
Well, because it would be quite interesting.
In terms of the sources you were looking at?
Yes.
Yes, right. So, right. And of course you must have gotten tired of looking at Sirius at such a low elevation.
Well, Sirius, that was enough. I have my own
Right. Well, when exactly then did you go down to CSIRO?
I think it was the
What projects did you begin working on there? Or I should ask you even before that, what was your impression of the laboratory when you first arrived?
Well, I thought it was a very good one. It was particularly good for chemistry, because that's why I was asked.
Right. How would you compare their style with that you would see in Jodrell Bank, for instance?
Oh,
Or are there strengths and weaknesses versus Jodrell Bank?
Well,
Jodrell
Bank had, of course,
clear
reference to Paris on the
great history. Right, at that time, yes.
And this was dominating. The other one had a lot more, because there were more instances of sun.
Yes. Right. And Christensen, of course, also. But are you implying that the dish at that time was sapping the strength of the research?
No, I wouldn't take that strength. Then taking the whole very large part of the effort.
Right. Yeah, it was just sort of in the early design stage, about 56 or so, yeah. Right, right. Okay, well, then what were the things that you got involved in when you... So what you're saying is you didn't control for that yet? Now, what was your motivation to do this? Because others had done this by then, had they not? I'm trying to think now. I guess I'm getting confused with a laboratory intensity interferometer as opposed to photon correlation.
Yes, this is
Yes, right, that's a classic experiment, yes. Okay. So that was a rather non-radio astronomy thing that you did with Alec Little.
Yes, I
Yeah. But now another thing which I came across in the radio astronomy bibliography I have is that you gave a talk at a conference in September 56 about the possibility of detecting various radio lines other than the hydrogen line of helium, deuterium, OH, CH, and so forth. How did you get involved in that?
Oh, that was like a big one. Like one of these conferences of this before. I mean, Tom even heard about these directories from the Dutch. He was living around in the counties in various parts of the world. I was happy to find out about it.
Yes. So you just decided to look into it for yourself.
And there's many more than I thought of. There's much more complicated, as complicated molecules as there are.
Right. Well, of course, that's easy to say in hindsight. Actually, Charles Townes also had a paper about that time, which got involved in these same kind of things at another conference. But even he didn't foresee all of the different molecules that were going to come along. But you didn't, on the basis of this, actually carry out any experiments, or anyone else at Radio Physics didn't carry out?
They weren't very good. They didn't have any, most of these things were very high frequency.
Right. Right. Yes, yes.
And people were taking all down the NRL.
Yes, right. Another project which I see that you worked on while down there was with the some of the dishes in the crisscross at Fleurs,
yes,
with Little and Carter.
Yes.
Can you tell me what the motivation was there? And
well, the motivation there, which was possible, was involving directly with experiments.
I see. So you just wanted to get your hands dirty with the...
Well, no, this is not what you want.
Yes.
I was rather worth it. It was such a small, so small, you really couldn't do very much.
Just the half dozen strongest sources, it looked like, right?
So I was looking to use my detect polarization.
And I don't think that you succeeded in that, did you?
I don't think in that way, Dan. Anyway, you detected there very small.
Right. No, in fact, I know you didn't, because it wasn't until at NRL. Yeah, with four, how many of those dishes, 18-foot dishes, I think, it would have been very difficult to see. Oh, yes, you had that. And, of course, that was of interest because there was some information on its intensity distribution from occultations and so forth.
Yes.
Also.
But that wasn't the main thing. I was more interested in
Okay, now, I have papers relative to the latter, but I don't have anything here relevant to cosmology. What did you think about them in that regard? I see. In other words, to try to get a distance only from radio techniques.
Yes, or some distance.
Right. And what kind of ways did you think of? Now, of course, this was when the whole source count controversy was raging between Cambridge and Sydney. Did you consider, for instance, sizes of sources as maybe a standard?
Yes, the angle of size of certain ones is that before, if they were attached to a regular amount, they should get bigger, apparently.
When you got to enough of a high redshift, right?
Yes, there were certain ones, but generally was washed out.
That's a shame that you didn't write up some of that, because I think that would have been the first considerations of some of those things.
I'm sure it's not.
Yeah, well, that's true also.
No, it is not. It's fairly obvious. Look, one of the observables is that any of them, you can say about the ability, any of them have a the angle of size today, and of course some of the clouds. It's not as possible to get
brightness.
Brightness. And then you know what to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to look, I'm sure it's not a correct size, you know. This is the size, you know. When you combine
as somewhat of an outsider, I'd be interested in your comments on the whole source count controversy as to the pros and cons of the different methods that were used and the different prejudices that people might have had in interpreting their data and so forth.
Yeah, well, of course, his thought was Ryle hadn't allowed the use of common.
Right. So you don't see that there were any particular lacks in the way that Mills did his analysis?
No, I think the level of which he asked how to put it in terms.
Well, there was some problem with the extended sources as to what fraction of them really were blends of galactic background features. Since he had a pencil beam instrument, he was sensitive to these extended features. Right. But another thing I would ask about, especially you being a theorist primarily, is the so-called P of D analysis. Do you remember this, that the Cambridge group came forth with, Scheuer and Ryle, which more or less admitted that they were confusion limited, but said, well, look, we can still look at the fluctuations in our record and interpret them statistically.
Okay.
And in fact, the more I think about this, this is sort of right up your line of dealing with noise statistics and so forth. And they said, if you do this, then you can clearly see that, once again, it's inconsistent with a Euclidean-type universe.
Well, I think by then they got put in Charmant-Johnny
Good. Right. But did this argument impress you at all? But, that's right, he did in the early 60s, yeah. But then, if they had this result saying that the slope was significantly different from 1.5 in log n log s, and Mills's result said that it was similar, then what did you make of that?
Well, I made that, I'm not sure that there's a sensitivity
than the 2C survey. Well, to be honest, I can't remember how sensitive the P of D analysis did go, but I thought it was not more than a factor 2 different than Mills's counts. But anyway, I'm not sure. But your memory is that you you thought that that was the resolution of this, that they were simply going to different sensitivity levels.
Yes.
I see. And so that it would be Euclidean until a certain point, and then it would drop off.
Yes, because I don't know how much it's going to be. It's a very interesting idea, and a lot of people do have a problem with it.
Right.
Okay, it sounds very often bad for the construction of the one.
Yes, yes. So it was useful as a catalyst, more or less, too. But are you saying that, that on the other hand, it was not appealing to you as...
No, I thought terrible Bill theory of Bill Thomas Bill theory of
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, yes, but that's an important part of how science develops also, as you know. Well, let's take a look at some of these individual theoretical studies that that you did. And first I want to go back to one that was still while you were back in England that was published in Phil Mag in 54, in which you talked about radiation from cosmic ray electrons in a magnetic field. And I assume, I must admit I didn't get a chance to look at that paper, I assume you're referring to what we call synchrotron radiation now. And in CASA, you worked out that if it had a field of a hundredth of a Gauss, that you might get a turnover in the spectrum at a very low frequency, like 10 or 20 megahertz. So is it correct to say that at that time, in 53 or 54, that you were pretty convinced that synchrotron radiation was the mechanism of...
Yes, I think it's true.
Right. But now, of course, the Soviet theorists, in particular Ginzburg and Shklovsky, have been pushing this since 50-51 quite a bit. But my impression is that in the West, even by 53-54, when you wrote this article, it was not being accepted very generally.
There are some of you not. It was considered astronomical constant.
Right.
And so you don't believe in New York
right.
at all. What is it like? Because the enormous energy in the stores.
Right.
I'm very worried. It's sort of in some other.
But it was all you had to deal with, and
well,
I guess.
That's right. The only one because they put the drought along that you see with all black bodies and
yeah. Yeah. Well, he was also in favor of plasma oscillations, I think. I guess that was going back earlier, actually, in 49 or 50. But in any case, so you were convinced by that time that synchrotron was the most plausible. And what experimental proof was needed really to establish more soundly in your mind?
Well, one would expect it to get polarization. And of course, do.
And but do you remember what it was? Which actual experiments that more or less convinced you that?
The final thing was the path.
At optical wavelengths, are you speaking about first or radio?
Optical, yes.
Yeah. Right, which happened about that same time. Yeah. Okay, the next study I have here is one that you did in looking at possible amplifications or negative absorption while you were down at radio physics, and you investigated synchrotron and Cherenkov and gyro radiation. And worked out all of these details. Were these in response to specific experiments that were going on at radio physics, or just the general problem of radio astronomy?
Well, when I said it did arise, it was talking to me all while about the sun.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the sometimes stress polarized Earth. I think probably are.
Right. And you had another paper with Jim Roberts in which you looked more specifically at the various types of solar bursts and considered whether they might be gyro radiation.
Or not,
yeah. Concluding that it was unlikely that they were.
Yeah. The other type, yeah.
So I gather then that you were sort of resident theorist there for...
I was resident theorist. Jim Roberts was a heavy theorist. I then became a theorist. He got more and more
into... Right.
They were having
the IGE in the year. That's right. In terms of mainly solar observations, do you mean? Yes. Well, at this time also, you somehow got involved with the putting the what came to be the Narrabri instrument into Australia. Can you tell me about that?
Well, that's what when I was in the ERO.
Well, how long did you stay at radio physics?
2 years.
Yeah.
At the very end, I was trying to get the final term. So I was going to be on the track on the third morning. I was very much in the park.
You mean the whole site flooded?
Yeah. And then, but I talked to Harry Messel.
Yes.
About the possibility. Do
Yes.
And then all the time I was out there, which is where I was raising money,
Brown describes some of these some of his problems in getting the money and so forth in the late 50s. Right. And you find, well, you said finally that the Air Force came through with the last bit of money that was needed. And so you stayed down. Well, you said now, first of all, that you left, but then you must have gone back at some stage. I see.
So we had enough of it. Still, of course, there's always time to run out of money at the airport.
Right.
So I came back in here, and I ran around the open and I tried to be a little where we had a policy.
Right. So Hanbury was still at Jodrell at that time. Right. And you more with the electronic. Okay. And then it was in 1962, I believe, early 62, when the equipment finally got down there. But you had already, according to Hanbury's book, had already been there in selecting a site and so forth.
Yes, I did. Well, sometimes they tried to pass the ball. Not as I was, I'm sure. They tried to put it back.
Yes. I mean, with the experience of the years proved it to be a good thing.
Yes, it was adequate.
Well, my history ends in the early 60s, and of course, Narrabri itself is not part of the history of radio astronomy. I would be interested in asking you a more general question about how you saw the nature of radio astronomy changing from your first introduction to it around 1949 or 50 until, I guess you were more or less left in the early 60s from any direct involvement in radio astronomy.
Well, of course,
A very what looking thing? Yes. Now, when you say awful looking, do you mean in terms of running around in fields with these aerials, or? Now, what brought about the change, do you think? The optical identifications must have been another thing that began to... Right. Yeah. Now, when you say the increased sophistication, was this sophistication in the astronomical problems to attack, or in the electronics... Right. Right. Now, but now, is this a necessary, not necessary, but is this any different than what was going on in the rest of electronics and radio technology?
No.
Right. 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 What about the nature of how the science was done itself, and the type of people that were in it? Was it? Did you see any changes over the?
Well, in the beginning, when I was entirely,
Right.
And the same thing.
Right. Because radar was given such high priority.
Radar had very high priority. And they would not have been in that. There was any view of any way that it was used.
Yes.
There was population normal at all. None of the quantities were not recommended on the Avatar part of the war.
Yeah, yeah.
There was quite a lot of people in who never was
used. Right.
And that helped get into the movement.
Yes, yes. Right, the Jansky's and Reber's first observations. Grote Reber? Oh yes, I have met him and interviewed him at great length. He's a fascinating character, of course. Well, I don't think that's a fair... I rebel against this word amateur for Reber, except in the classical sense of lover. Yes, okay, well, if you put him in with Herschel, then yes, I will agree, right? Okay, okay. Well, most people use it in that sense, and they call him a radio amateur, and you tend to think of this ham that... Right. Okay, okay, then I fully agree with you. Right, but the thing was, he was very competent radio engineer. He knew his stuff inside out. I mean, the only reason he didn't go to work at a place like radio physics or something is this incredibly independent style.
Well, that's right. I mean,
and then after a while, the field passed him by because you just couldn't do anything by yourself, essentially. Sure. Well, they still do in many fields of astronomy.
Of course,
comets and variable stars. This is a rather interesting aspect of astronomy that can still have that contribution. What about the people? You talked about the type of people in the beginning, but what kind of people were you seeing in the early 60s?
So, in my dad, you know, how many people did you get to all others.
Right. Right, right. So it had some kind of a definition then as you do some postgraduate training and so forth. Well, that just about covers what I wanted to talk about. Were there any things that I've missed that are relevant to your career in radio astronomy?
That ends the interview with Richard Twiss on 17th.